Hello and welcome to The Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle.
This is Teachers Talk Radio and you are listening live.
Yes, hello and welcome to The Twilight Show. Tonight I'm going to be talking about the new Education Secretary, vaccines for 12 to 15 year olds and getting your views on both. Welcome to Teachers Talk Radio.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Yes, hello and welcome once again. It's really great to be back with you this evening and I cannot wait to be discussing the vaccinations for 12 to 15 year olds and of course our new Education Secretary. So, I apologise first of all, I've had a few technical issues this evening, but I think I have managed to sort those out now. So if you are just joining us, welcome once again. So this week, I chose to do a little bit of research into the new Education Secretary, Nadeem Zahawi, and some of the different thought-provoking things, really, that surround a new Education Secretary when they come into office. Now, we know that Boris has obviously shaken up his cabinet in his reshuffle, and we know that we've got Mr. Williamson, who has now left, and Nadeem Zahawi has come in. In the news also, we have seen some really interesting developments when it comes to the vaccination drive for 12 to 15-year-olds. And all the different views and opinions that we've seen surrounding that. And every morning I listen to different radio shows, listening to different radio presenters on the way to work, because I have a 40-minute drive into work, into school, and I have about the same on the way home. And I love to listen to all different views and opinions about lots of different things, especially the bits and pieces relating to education. So what I have been listening to quite a lot this week has been the concerns surrounding the vaccination drive for 12 to 15 year olds. And there has been really, really strong views and opinions about this. And whether you're a parent, whether you're a teacher, whether you are a minister, a member of parliament, there's so many different views and opinions that people are putting forward. So I think it's been really, really helpful to talk about this, to get some views, to get some opinion, and to see what you think about this and where you think we should go. I don't really at this stage have a complete opinion on this because I feel like I need to know, I need to learn a little bit more about this before I can form an opinion. So I have been really lucky to speak to a previous caller, previous interviewee, I should say, that I had on a few weeks ago, Chris, who is a AP in a school in Kent, who has been really, really great in providing his insight into the vaccinations and what he thinks about the new Education Secretary. So please, I really, really hope that you enjoy listening to this interview, and I will begin and start sharing this for you now. Hello, Chris. Really, really nice to be able to speak to you this evening, and thank you for joining me once again.
No, thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
No problem at all. So how is it going? What is it now, the third or fourth week back?
Yeah, I think it's Yeah, we've been back since late August, so it feels like I've been back for an eternity. Yep, really tired, absolutely shattered. It's been strange going back to the old normal. I don't know if you found the same, but it was, you know, when you consistently do a routine for a certain amount of time, like it was over a year, that becomes your new norm. So now reverting back to where we were feels really abstract. And I think that it's taking some adjusting from both staff and pupils, to be honest. It's really not been the easiest, but I think we're getting there.
Absolutely. It's been a real eye-opener, actually, going back to the old normal, because we got so used to the bubbles, so used to everything that we were doing, all of these new structures. And I suppose some of the kids, the year sevens especially, and potentially the year eights as well, who were really out of the loop of school, out of that structure, and now they've been thrown back in. And actually, in many ways, I think they're doing really, really well. And that's testament to teachers, to them, and also, of course, to the parents that are helping us along the way as well. So it is very, very good to be back into the old normal. And we will see what happens with that going forward. And yeah, you know what? We've got some real changes at the moment, haven't we?
Yeah, we certainly have. It's been an interesting week, hasn't it?
Really has. And quite a... in a way, I think many of us expected, and by the way, to listeners, we're talking about the new Education Secretary, Nadeem Zahawi, who was, I think, a bit of a dark horse. I don't think I've ever really thought about him coming into the Department for Education before. I think a lot of people were quite concerned and apprehensive about a potential return of Mr. Gove. But who knew what was going to happen there? No comment. And we're going to see what happens. And this is what Chris and I are going to be discussing this evening. And then we're going to be moving on to talking about the vaccination drive for 12 to 15 year olds. And Chris has got a really good insight here, because not only is he a member of senior leadership team, he's also a teacher, obviously, and a parent. So he's got several viewpoints on this, and it's going to be really great to discuss that. So, Chris, I'm going to go straight in and throw you in at the deep end. What do you think of Nadeem Zahawi?
I think that he, obviously, he delivered the vaccination programme. And thanks, you know, I think the first thing I want to say about that is, you know, that was thanks to the absolutely amazing work of scientists behind the scenes in order to do that so quickly. I think it was an absolutely unbelievable effort, and really testament to this country's ability to really stand up to the challenge. And we've got some real intellectuals who were able to produce this vaccine so incredibly quickly. And clearly it's causing a disconnect between the amount of cases and the number of deaths, which is absolutely amazing. So I think that, you know, that's the first thing that we really need to applaud. I think that the new Education Secretary did a good job in terms of the vaccination program. I, from a personal level, I don't know how you found it, but I found it to be very well organized. I found it to be really easy to go and get the vaccine. And I think that those who were administering the vaccines were absolutely amazing. I think that it was a real coming together, and I think it was a huge effort. And, you know, I think it's only fair that if we're going to applaud that effort, that you have to applaud the person who was leading that, you know, as you would in a school with a head teacher with amazing results. That's, of course, due to everybody, but it's also due to that head teacher. And I think that the same could be said for the new Education Secretary. So I'm really hoping that he's an improvement from Gavin Williamson. I hope that he really steps up to the challenge. I was really glad that Michael Gove was not put into place, or Dominic Raab for that matter. So I was very, very pleased with that. Obviously, the cabinet reshuffle came out of the blue. It wasn't something that many people foresaw or knew about. So it was interesting to see those changes.
So I completely agree with you. The way in which the vaccine has been rolled out across the country, I think no matter your view on the vaccines, whether you're pro or against, the way in which that has been organised and structured has been absolutely testament to the, you know, the public servants and the NHS and the government itself in getting those jabs in people's arms. And looking at the statistics, it's clear now, I think, that it is breaking that link. And I think every news outlet I've read today, it says that cases seem to be coming down. Let's hope that's the case. And it was really interesting that they're saying that there's potentially that the return to school has not yet caused infections to rise. We will wait and see. Obviously, experience tells us differently in many schools across the country. But fingers crossed, that's the way it's going to stay. But your comment there, Chris, about really glad that Michael Gove wasn't returned into education. Why is that?
I felt that the changes he made, although I agree with the Progress 8 scores that were introduced in order to provide comparison between grammar and other schools, I feel that the changes that he made were far too rapid. I think that he put too much pressure on the education system at the time and teachers in particular. And I think that drove a lot of really good teachers out of the profession. And I think that that's demonstrated quite clearly in the fact that they had to start giving large payouts, well, I say payouts, large amounts of money to certain subjects for teachers to train in those subjects.
In the bursaries on the
teacher training. Yeah. I think that sort of really says all you need to know. You know, geography, for example, we're both geography teachers. I certainly didn't get that amount of money. But it was...
It cost me.
Yeah, it did me as well. We went in at the wrong time, Charlie, completely. So I think that they had to do that to dig themselves out of a hole because of the strain that he put on the profession. Mm. You know, there were some positives, absolutely. There were some negatives as well, and it was a bit too much too quickly. I think he should have taken a more graduated approach, to be honest.
Mm. I think a lot of people have got very strong views on Michael Gove either way. I obviously entered the world of teaching in education after the Gove reform, so I don't really remember anything prior to what that has been my normal since really starting to teach. So it's always interesting to listen to different views on this. And that moves me on to my next question for you, Chris. What hopes do you really have for Nadeem Zahawi as our new Education Secretary in terms of policy direction?
It's a really good question. Stability. I think that the education system needs stability. I think that it's gone through a change, like through a period of immense pressure. And I don't feel that with Gavin Williamson, teachers and most importantly, young people were given enough time to prepare. I really do hope that there is thought put into what is going to happen to current year 11s and current year 13s, because I don't know about you, but there's huge gaps in learning. It's really highlighted, and I really do feel for these pupils. There's been a lot of lost learning for them. And I think it would be, for me, incredibly unfair were they to sit full GCSEs or full A-levels, for example. I think there needs to be some sort of compromise, some sort of dilution of the exams. I worry desperately about the pupils' mental health and anxiety. And I think we really need to take that into consideration. And my hopes are really that we understand, we know that a decision is made sooner rather than later about what's going to happen in the summer, as opposed to Mr. Williamson leaving it until the absolute last minute and putting such immense pressure on teachers, parents and students. So I think in the short term, they're my hopes.
Mm.
In the long term, I think that there needs to be greater retention of teachers. I think that's incredibly important.
How do we do that, Chris? How do we encourage greater retention?
I think that one of the things that really needs to be looked at is work-life balance. very, very difficult, and the mental well-being and of the teachers within our schools, I think that they really need to be looked after. I'm not sure that the Conservative government, who have some fairly interesting names for teachers, have done enough to look after the profession, which is absolutely vital and vitally important, because you look after the teachers, they look after the pupils, and the pupils get the outcomes, the pupils are happy, and the pupils are able to make the choices that they want to make. So it's really, you've got to look after the core in order to look after everybody else. So I hope that something is done in order to support teachers and encourage retention, because at the moment I really do fear for teaching as a profession. And I don't know how you feel about it, but I feel that there's far too many teachers that have left the profession because it's all become a bit too much.
It is a very difficult question for me to really answer, because I've been quite lucky where I've worked and the people that I work with, and I feel personally that my mental health and my well-being is always looked after. But when you speak to people in other schools and other areas of the country, especially reading on Twitter and Facebook, it's very, very interesting at times, because you get such a mixed view of what's going on. And I feel that the government are going to very much likely have to respond to, as you say, the mental health and well-being of teachers, because that is so, so important. We know how important that is. I say the phrase happy teachers equals happy students, and obviously happy students leads to better progress and attainment. So I think we're going to see a shift. I think there's always a you know, we've spoken about this before, it's very circular in education, but I think there's potential that they will work on that. And it's really interesting to read comments from leaders of the teaching unions. I mean, one of them I read yesterday has held out their hand to him to say, welcome to the post, we hope to work with you hand in hand. So let's wait and see. That's my hope. I hope that there's a lot greater collaboration between the Department of Education and our profession. I think that's so needed. But then you read other people's comments, and I read a thread today actually that somebody and another, there was two teachers arguing about this, and they were saying somebody, the education minister should always have had experience teaching or working in the education system. But really, is that viable? Is that something that can happen? What do you think? Do you think we could have an unelected education minister?
I think, so I want to go back to the previous point first, if I may. I think I mentioned the last time that I was on your show that schools do such an amazing job of papering over the cracks that the government doesn't fill. I think that you mentioned your own school in terms of, you know, dealing with, you know, helping anxiety and, you know, ensuring that anxiety is not, you know, becoming a thing because they look after their teachers so much. And, you know, absolutely the same could be said for my school. I just feel that the government should be doing more to look after schools and teachers, as opposed to schools always having to do it themselves. And I think that, you know, that's a really key point. There's, for far too long, I think, yeah, and particularly with Gavin Williamson, he just relied on the education system to get itself through without actually looking after the education system.
And how resilient were we?
The education system, incredibly, you know, it's resilience is absolutely, it's at the heart of schools and at the heart of teaching. And I think we ask it of our pupils and we demand it of ourselves. So, yeah, absolutely. In terms of your second question, which I've now forgotten, could you please repeat that?
It was about the argument that I was reading between two teachers about whether we should only ever have unelected secretaries of state for education that have only had experience as a teacher.
I don't think that they necessarily need to have experience as a teacher. I do, however, think that they need to immerse themselves in every aspect of education. Now, that's really difficult. I think that Gavin Williamson could have done far more to do that. I think it's really important that he understands different types of schools, that the new education secretary understands the pressures on teachers, heads as well, and pupils. And it can't just be a PR stunt. It needs to be a genuine understanding. I don't care that he's never taught in a school. We've all been through the school system, although, you know, the Tories have been through a very unique school system.
Some of them, but not all. Let's just be, you know, as unbiased as possible there. Some, not all.
Okay, just the ones who have led the country for the last 10 years. I really do hope that he properly ingratiates himself within the education system, understands the different aspects of it. I'm not just talking about going into schools, but also, you know, the Department for Education, the exam boards. There's so many different facets to education and so many different stakeholders. So no, I really don't think it's necessary that it's, you know, he's not been a teacher. I think it'd be an absolute bonus. I really do. But he needs to understand the pressures. He needs to understand the positives and the areas for improvement.
And does that mean then, Chris, that there's going to, do you think there's a high likelihood from a complete change of education secretary, and I think a completely different type of person leading this department now? Are we going to see a transformation of curriculum, of Ofsted, of everything?
I don't think so. I don't think that there'll be wide sweeping changes to begin with. I think that the priority will be in dealing with the loss of teaching time due to COVID. And I really hope that's the priority. I think there's been a lot done with curriculum and specification, and there's been lots of Ofsted changes, you know, many of which have been really positive, actually. So I don't think that he'll necessarily look to touch those areas to begin with. At least I'm hoping not. I think that there's far more pressing things that need to be done prior to those.
What do you, just leading on from that, what are your thoughts on Amanda Spielman's comments the other day that schools focused far too much on food parcels rather than teaching over the COVID lockdown?
It angers me, the comment, if I'm honest. I think that had the government done more to ensure that we weren't having to support some families with food parcels, food banks, you know, it's really wrong that she would be saying that. Schools really stood up and were counted during that time. There were so many schools that were doing so much in order to support those around them, not just in education, but in so many different areas, in terms of support, you know, pastorally and for mental health, ensuring that children were being fed. I think the thing, you know, the work that Marcus Rashford did, for example, was absolutely phenomenal. I really do. I really feel that he stood up and was counted during that time. And I feel the same as schools. I feel it's so almost cruel to say something like that, because of course the focus was always live lessons and doing absolutely what we could for our pupils, ensuring that we had high engagement, high attendance to those live lessons, that work was still being marked. But to say that we concentrated too much on food parcels and things like that is for me just not a nice, kind thing to say. I think it's really unfair.
Very quite an emotive topic, really, for teachers to read and discuss that.
How do you feel? Because your school, personally, they did an incredible amount, as did mine. You know, in terms of creating PPE and for the local hospital and food parcels. Does that strike a chord with you?
When I read that, I have to admit, I was quite taken aback, because I thought everything that you know, where I work, where you work, where so many schools were involved in supporting their students through food parcels, and as you say, the PPE for the local NHS services and the rest of it, we were doing everything we possibly could to support everyone. And I felt quite emotional for the people that were on the front, not on the front line, but you know what I mean with that. Yeah. Those that were really in every day, day in, day out, because we were never closed. No. And I did feel for them because I wondered how they must have felt by those comments. But, you know, we get on, we carry on. And I think, as you say, that it's the resilience of our profession that enables us to do that.
Absolutely.
So what we're going to do now, we're just going to go to an ad break and we will continue after this.
Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. At Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 15 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique, challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors, and fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles, and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website, www.creativeresources.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using the discount code TT Radio. Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. teacherslovestationery.club. Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE-validated programmes to help you? Read-Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics.
Yes, hello and welcome back to The Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle. It's fantastic to have your company as always. So far tonight, you have been listening to the interview that took place between myself and a former colleague of mine, Chris. And we were talking about the new Education Secretary, Nadeem Zahawi, and the ways in which that we would either expect or like to see the education system moving forward and how potentially things might go. We've had lots of change in education over the past 10 years. I only joined as a teacher 6 years ago, as you know from the stories that I spoke about over the past couple of weeks. But I know from speaking to many of my colleagues that have been in the system for a lot longer, many for over 20 years that have seen much change. They are very unsure at the moment as to what to expect from Nadeem Zahawi. Many actually were very pleased to see the back of Gavin Williamson. Many were quite apprehensive, especially when you hear that Michael Gove especially was returning to the cabinet because of all the changes, I suppose, that were put in place by Mr. Gove in, when was it? It was under the coalition government from 2010 onwards. So I think when there's ever a change in education secretary, it's inevitable at some point there will be a change, a shift in policy. But it will be very interesting for us to see where this goes. Just like to say a very warm welcome to Melly Roo and obviously Roger's History. And I think we've got a Kath Casey 414, and we've got a Leanne who's also entered, and a Lauren. So welcome, and of course to Suzanne Barron. Welcome to everybody. So what I'm going to do now is go back to the interview with Chris, where we're going to talk a little bit more about the COVID vaccinations for 12 to 15 year olds, and again a little bit more about our new education secretary.
Hello, yes, and welcome back to Teachers Talk Radio Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle. I've got Chris joining me this evening talking about the new Education Secretary, Nadeem Zahawi, and the COVID vaccination drive for 12 to 15-year-olds. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you.
No problem at all. So we've discussed the new Education Secretary. We've discussed Gavin Williamson's exit from the Department for Education, and now what I would like to discuss with you is this vaccination story for our young people. There's been lots in the media recently about this. I've especially been listening to a different radio show every morning on the way to work. I absolutely love listening to it because I feel like I get quite an insight into different viewpoints from both sides of the fence, really. And listening to that this morning, it was really, really quite interesting. I keep using that word, interesting. Somebody at work said to me, that's your radio word, is interesting.
That's
what they say. It is. There is such a divide here between those that are pro-vaccinating our children and those that are very, very anti-vaccinating our children. And you've then kind of got schools sitting in between saying, okay, well, you know, don't blame us, we're just doing what we're told. And I think it must be such a challenging position for any leadership team, any school to be in. And I feel like, Chris, you're going to be able to give such an insight into this because, number one, you're part of senior leadership. Number two, you're a parent. And number three, you're very opinionated, and I love it. So let's start off. Have you received any guidance already from the government to your school regarding vaccinations? Is your school ready if you're required to do so?
We've received some guidance, not an awful lot. The school will absolutely be ready, like most schools will be, because we had to test pupils. I don't think the administering of the vaccine is going to be a problem. I think that we need support in doing so, but I can't see that the actual giving us the vaccine as being a problem at all, to be honest. So that's not concerning, and we are absolutely able to do that.
And that's the thing here, is the organisation of it. And so many schools up and down the country were so amazing with their organisation of the testing. I was absolutely astounded at the work and the just the sheer organisation that had to go into that, and the way in which it just flowed, especially at my school. I mean, I think it was absolutely testament to not only the leadership, but the volunteers and everyone that supported that process. And I would imagine that if this does go ahead in schools, that similar process will take place, and it will be absolutely seamless because we are, as a profession, amazing at organising. So
I was going to say as well, I think the pupils themselves, I can't believe how well they stood up to this challenge. It's not easy. You've got to remember, for these young people, it's really scary. And if you're
having something shoved up your nose at 12 years old, absolutely.
It is. And if you'd have said to me 2 years ago that this was would be what was going to happen, I honestly wouldn't have believed it, and they wouldn't either. But they were just so willing and helpful and wanting to test regularly so that we could try our very best to stop the spread of the virus. So I think absolute testament to the young people that have gone through this. It's been absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. And I think in many ways it shows their respect for not only their peers, but also their teachers,
yeah.
because they were so willing to take part in that. And so wanting to keep everyone safe. And for young people who many, many times in the media get such bad rap at times, we work with them every day. We know what they're like. But wow, what amazing young people we work with.
Punch.
I'm just going to pause us there because I think it's really important for us to gain some other views and opinions surrounding this. And you've just heard me and Chris talking there about the way in which our young people have conducted themselves, especially through the testing, through the whole coronavirus lockdown scenario when schools were in inverted commas closed, because of course we never closed. We were always open, even when we were providing face-to-face education for key worker students, when we were providing food parcels for our young people and our vulnerable families, our pupil premium students, our vulnerables. And I think this is the perfect time now to really start discussing your thoughts on this. I mean, I've got some people who are obviously listening tonight. Melly Rue, once again, hello from Chatham. I've got Elma, who has joined us. Suzanne, I believe, Suzanne, you are a regular listener as well. So welcome to you. So if you've got any comments that you would like to make, especially surrounding how your schools have responded and how your students have responded to the coronavirus lockdowns and the way that when we returned to school after, what was it, the Christmas and the January lockdowns, when we went back and we put in those structures and those procedures for the mass testing that schools were responsible for when we went back, how our amazing young people responded to that. I can remember at the time I was a part of my school's senior leadership team. I was an associate senior leader, and we were all put on a rota to go into the testing centre. And wow, that was organised to such an amazing level. The students, the way that they conducted themselves, the way that they were so resilient. I mean, if you think about it, think about a 12-year-old child walking into a testing centre where they are going to be told whether that they are COVID positive, this awfully destructive virus that is taking over the world, or whether they're negative, and how apprehensive those young people must be. I mean, I work with all boys in my school, so you sometimes get a bit of emotion from them, but sometimes they sit there with a bit of a poker face. And it was really quite eye-opening to watch them go in and have these COVID tests and to sit together and wait for their results. I mean, we did an absolutely amazing job at ensuring that our young people were really safe and making sure that we were there not only to support them through that process, but to support the emotional side of it as well. And I think when you're working with young people, especially in these sorts of situations, the pastoral side of the care that you provide is so, so important. Which then leads me on to what was quite shocking to many teachers over the past few days, was when we had Amanda Spielman, the leader of Ofsted, the people that check standards in schools, coming out and saying that schools focused far too much on providing food parcels over teaching our children during the lockdown. I think that has been a very, very divisive comment from the leader of the people that inspect our schools, Ofsted, coming out and saying to teachers that we did not focus enough on teaching, but focusing too much on delivering food parcels. Now, I've spoken to many people over the past week about this, and it has been very, very divisive, and there's been a lot of emotion, a lot of... Some people say, well, you know, it's Ofsted, they say these things, and some people saying, I cannot believe this has been said. But then you've also got that feeling, that thought in your own mind that how can somebody sit there and question a school providing not only education virtually, providing remote teaching to all students, I might add, and food parcels and doorstep rewards and looking after our most vulnerables. But the thing is, I mean, TSCW, you actually can do both, because I know full well that my school did so, and we did so absolutely successfully. And I would absolutely say that that goes for many schools around the country. Please, if you've got an alternative view, please don't hesitate to put that forward. Yes, hello then, Suzanne, listening for from Bexon Lane campsite. I'm assuming that's the Duke of Edinburgh. Welcome. I hope you're having an absolutely amazing time. I don't know if you're... Well, you're probably there with some students, so I hope you're having the best time. We've also got a Luke Lees who's joined this evening. So welcome to you, Luke. I hope you're enjoying your listening to this tonight. And we've got another one from TSCW. Of course, you can do both. TSCW... Why don't you give me a call? Call into the show and let's have a conversation. Let's discuss this. I would love to have a chat with you about this. And thank you to Melly Roo, who has liked the show, and to the 9 listeners that we have got currently. I'm really, really hoping that you are enjoying listening to this. And obviously, if you would like to join and to call in, then please do so. I would love to hear your views and your opinions. Now, as I was saying, we were discussing absolutely, Roger's history. It could be more than 9 because that is just on mobile. Now, I am just still getting used to this technology. I might only be 27, but my understanding and my ability to use technology these days has become quite waned in the past few years. I won't lie to you. I can just about use an iPhone. Yes, Mal CPT. Yes, Mal, I am 27. I know I only look 21, although my students would disagree with me. I regularly say to them that they are aging me, and many of them have told me previously that I looked about 45, which, no offence to anybody that is 45, but I was quite taken aback by those comments back in the day. But I have since lost 5.5 stone during that time. So, you know, I think I have taken at least 10 years off of what my students thought I was. You were 27 in the year 2000. Well, what a perfect age that would have been to celebrate the millennium. I wish I had been 27 in the year 2000. The trance music that was on in the clubs and the pubs back in the day, I wish that I had have been able to experience that. So, yes, welcome to everybody who's listening tonight. I'm now going to go to the news, and I'll be back just after this.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News with Tom Hopkins-Burke.
This is Tom Hopkins-Burke with a Teachers Talk Radio news special. Gavin Williamson has lost his job as Secretary of State for Education as part of a wider government reshuffle. Williamson, who had served as Education Secretary since 2019, has been criticised for his handling of schools and exams during the pandemic. Williamson tweeted he was particularly proud of the transformational reforms in post-16 education, in further education colleges, skills agenda, apprenticeships and more. Boris Johnson said last week that Williamson had done a heroic job of dealing with very difficult circumstances. Reaction to Gavin Williamson's departure as Education Secretary has been overwhelmingly positive. Shadow Education Secretary Kate Green claimed that Williamson has failed children and young people, their parents and our hard-working education staff during the pandemic. Sam Friedman, former Department for Education Special Advisor under Michael Gove, said that Williamson was by some distance the worst Education Secretary in history. And a statement from the University and College Union representing further and higher education workers said that Williamson was a disastrous Secretary of State who caused deep and lasting damage. Gavin Williamson has been replaced as Secretary of State for Education by Nadeem Zahawi. Zahawi, who has previously served as a junior minister in the Department for Education, is also a co-founder of a polling company, YouGov. As vaccines minister, Zahawi oversaw the approval of a single-dose vaccine for children aged between 12 and 15. Zahawi caused controversy last year by claiming falsely that poorer parents would prefer to pay a modest sum for free school meals. That was your Teachers Talk Radio News Special with Tom Hopkins Burke.
Yes, hello and welcome back to Teachers Talk Radio with me, Charlie Rozelle. It's really great to have your company this evening. Now, we've been talking about the new Education Secretary, Nadeem Zahawi, the departure of Gavin Williamson and vaccinating our young people. Should we be vaccinating our 12 to 15 year olds? Or is that not the right way forward? And what do you think about the new Education Secretary, the man that has, no matter what your opinion of the government, the Conservative Party or individual ministers, this man has been responsible for the rollout of the COVID vaccine. And, you know, no matter if you are pro or against the vaccine, he has delivered it in such a short space of time under very difficult conditions, which I think, no matter how you look at this, that is a very, very proud moment for anybody. So I've got Elma with me. So hello, Elma. Welcome.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I absolutely can. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay. How are you?
Very good, thank you. What would you like to say?
Well, I was going to talk about the schooling system and the kids going to school vaccinated and some of them not getting the vaccine.
You go for it. What would you like to say?
Okay, so I'm from Uganda and the situation's a little bit different here. And I think it comes down to the priorities. What you think will do best, because if we think of not vaccinating, then school is going to be on hold for so many kids right now. It's been about 2 years and very many children are still in the same classes that they were in 2 years ago, so it's quite hard. And then I'm a music teacher. It's really, really difficult to teach over using technology because music is an interactive subject and it's not easy to teach kids using technology and remote means.
So can I just ask you then, I know that from a British education perspective. I work in a secondary school. And in terms of music, I know that lots of creative ways have been implemented, especially over during when we were in our bubble system in schools, when we were keeping year groups in certain areas of the school. They weren't able to then mix with other year groups. When we were teaching music, it was really quite fun to watch, because you would have the students facing the front. They were allowed to stand and they were allowed to sing. They were allowed to take part in the lessons and doing all different musical styles of things. I mean, I'm not a music teacher. I don't claim to be a Beethoven expert, but I'm sure there are ways in which that it can be done. Have you found any niches, any ways that have worked successfully for you?
I have. We've been using Zoom over the past 6 months, and it's working efficiently, but not as efficient as it would be if we were face to face. And as I told you, it's interactive, so it's quite difficult. But that's the only way that we can learn with kids. I find that unquestionable. It's efficient, but there's a better way.
Oh, Elma, we have lost you slightly there. I will try to come back to you shortly. But what you've heard so far from Elma there is that it has been quite challenging being in Uganda. We've got a fabulous person talking to us from Uganda, and saying how challenging it has been for him to be teaching his subject of music. Elma, let's try you again. Are you there? Right, I think we might have lost you. If I can come back to you later, then I will. So, yes, you've been listening to me talking to you about the comments from Amanda Spielman, the chief of Ofsted, and talking about the vaccine rollout for 12 to 15-year-olds. I think it is, you know, as Chris said during the first half of that interview, it is a very emotive and very, very divisive subject to be discussing, because people have got all different views on this. People are saying, no, they will not be vaccinating my child. No, they should not be vaccinated. And then you've got other people saying, yes, absolutely. I mean, I was listening to a radio host this morning that was basically saying that if her child was told that they had to have a vaccine, they would bring legal proceedings against their school. I mean, I struggle really to understand how. I just don't know. I don't know what I really think about that, because one side of me is thinking, okay, I can understand that frustration, because it is obviously down to the parent whether what medical treatment that their child has. Then on the other side, I'm thinking, how can schools be sued when we are just doing what potentially the government is instructing us to do? I can't form an opinion on this one. I need you to help me out here. What are your thoughts? I mean, thank you very much, Luke Lees. You've used my name, Razzle Dazzle. There we go. That is what my amazing students know me as. And I thank you very much for listening this evening. So what ideas have we got? Melly Roo, Suzanne, what are you thinking about this? Type in your comments or give me a little call and let me know what you think about vaccinating 12 to 15-year-olds. I'm just going to return to the interview with Chris, and you will hear from me again shortly.
Hello, yes, and welcome back to Teachers Talk Radio Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle. I've got Chris joining me this evening talking about the new education. Hello.
Oh, we've got a slight issue with that. I will see if I can sort that out shortly. But yes, so What we ended up discussing was Chris's ideas, really, about the future of education and the way in which he was hoping that it would move with Nadeem Zahawi. And we don't know. How is this going to move? We've had much change over the past few years and much upheaval in education, curriculum changes. They, at one minute, you know, they are telling us one thing, the next minute something else is changing. And I suppose to a lot of teachers, it's been a very unsettling few years. I mean, as you know, I've said to you before, I have only been in the system for the past 6 years. I qualified in 2016. I did my PGCE at Canterbury Christchurch University, got my first job as an NQT in an all-boys non-selective school in Medway in Kent, and haven't looked back since. I absolutely love where I work. I love my job. And this is the only system that I have ever known. It's the only system that I've ever worked in. And you speak to lots of different teachers and they talk of all different times and different ways in which that they've worked and the curriculum that was offered and the amount of them that say, oh, it was so much better back in the 1990s, in fact, when I was born. I mean, the best year ever, 1994, the year that Friends was released and the year, of course, that I was born and enlightened the world with my presence. But, you know, things change. Are things changing in the right direction? Yes, Mal. Oh, my God. Are you saying, oh, my God, to the fact that I was born in 1994? Is that what you're, oh, my God-ing right now? Which uni did you go to, Mal, just out of interest? Ah, St. Matthew. So, Mal, I feel like you and I need to have a St. Mary's. There we go. I was going to say St. Matthew. Is that somewhere that's either closed or I've never heard of? I was being polite then. I'm not going to lie to you. But there we go. Absolutely. Mal, I feel like you and I need to have a very in-depth conversation at some time about our experiences in education, because I feel like you can, well, not even just in education, really. I feel like you can give me some insight into what the world was like back in the late 90s and early 2000s when I was a wee nipper, you know, wandering around Kent and growing up in Tony Blair's education system back in the day, in the 20th century. Now, you historians that must be listening as well, the other side to the humanities departments, the less fun side to the humanities departments. Sorry, Richard, if you're listening, who is my head of faculty. But you must know what it was like back in the 20th century, because I cannot remember. I'm far too young and far too young and fresh for that. But anyway, I divulge. So you taught history for 20. Oh dear, Mal, I'm digging myself a hole now, aren't I? Oh dear. I apologise. I'm very sorry. Tell you what, I will send you one of my frothy coffees one morning. How about that? But anyway, right. Stop distracting me, Mal. So we are talking about the vaccinations. How are you feeling about this? You know, tell me what you're thinking. Excuse me, I do not just colour. I provide very, very, very engaging worksheets where they have to do lots of different things other than colouring in. And you know what? There are more colours than just green and blue. I've got many, many colleagues at school that think it's very funny to say to me, oh, you just need a blue and green pencil in geography. Yes, that's right, brown. Well done. That is what we colour in, blue, green and brown. But we do much more. But you know what? I'm going to wind a few of you up now. All of my worksheets and all of my resources, oh, yes, I use Comic Sans. There we go. I bet that's just risen a few few eyebrows there, and I refuse to use Calibri. Mm-hmm. Yep. Geography, all in Comic Sans. Yes, absolutely. So, Elmer, I'm going to try to go back to you now. Let's see if we can have a conversation. Welcome back, Elmer. No, I don't think we've... Apologies about this. I don't think the audio is coming through from you. But Elmer says he thinks it should be optional and another alternative created. Now, Elmer, are you talking about the vaccine there, or are you talking about colouring pencils in geography? Elmer, if you could unmute your mic, that would be really useful. So then we can hear what you'd like to say. Okie dokie. So you think that an alternative should be provided with the vaccinations? Well,
hello.
Oh, go on, Elmer. I think we've got you. We've got you. Hurrah. Welcome back. So what do you propose the alternative to the vaccination should be?
Well, I haven't talked about the alternative yet, because I'm personally for the vaccination. Here we don't have the government doesn't have so much to offer. So many have to lean on the side of vaccination, and for about ever since the pandemic started, we can see the older people are getting vaccinated, and the little ones are not, and it's still because of this that they are not schooling, many of them. It's only like a portion of 20% of them that are schooling, and it's not the same. So for them to be able to go on, I think they should be vaccinated. But then I still know that it's everybody's right to say no to the vaccination, because everybody has a right to live the way they want to, and some people do not believe in getting the vaccination. So I strongly believe that if an alternative is created, then that will be much better for the school system here.
So you believe that vaccination should absolutely be part of the response to COVID in schools in your country? Just out of interest, what is the current percentage of people that are fully vaccinated in Uganda?
I'm really not sure, but it's about... it's not certain yet.
Right, I see.
I haven't checked, yeah.
So I'm actually trying to find that.
They've been concentrating on the population of the vulnerable people. So we got the people over 50, we've got the teachers, we've got all the essential workers, and only those. So the percentage is quite low, but it's
right. So the latest sorry to interrupt you. The latest vaccination data that I can see is that I'm just looking here, and it looks as though that in Uganda, over 1,436,000 people have received at least their first COVID vaccine. It's about 1.6% of the population. And you're saying that is obviously the most vulnerable in your society, and not necessarily your young people. Whereas we are in the UK now having this debate as to whether it is morally right to provide our young people with the vaccination. Now, I think many teachers, I mean, some have commented to me in passing in the corridors that it makes them feel slightly safer as adults, because you have got a situation where you are in buildings that are, let's face it, many times are potentially very poorly ventilated, because they can't be. You do your best to ventilate, but many of these school buildings are very old. And it makes adults, members of staff, feel slightly more at ease if everybody that they are around is becoming vaccinated, because there is a potential that our young people can spread the virus. That, you know, it is, I think, pretty much common sense that most people have got the ability to transmit that virus. There is studies that say you can or you can't. It's either way. I don't think we've ever really had a definitive answer from anybody as to whether if you've had the vaccine, you definitely can or can't spread it. But I think it lowers the risk of transmission to teachers. And that is, I think, what a lot of teachers and a lot of adults have been saying. Thank you, Mal. The UK is 66% vaccinated, with Uganda at 0.8%. Wow. Now, not only as a geography teacher, but as a human being, that is astonishing. And this also, I suppose, opens the debate as well as to whether it is right for Britain and the other ACs. There we go, geographers. Advanced countries, I'm winking at you as I speak, whether the ACs should be providing booster jabs at this point. However, that we obviously don't provide government policy. We can only discuss it. I don't really have a view either way on this, really. I think it's very interesting to discuss this. But thank you so much, Elmer. And I really, really hope that your young people, your adult population and your country gets vaccinated. I hope that you come out of this very, very soon. Stay safe and have a lovely evening. Right, so
thank you.
Yes, thank you, Elmer. There we go. Right. So, yes, thank you so much to Elmer for that. That was very, very interesting listening to his experience in Uganda and the situation there with the vaccines. Now, what I'm going to do, I'm just going to go to the ads and then we will continue our discussion about the new education secretary and the comments from Amanda Spielman. Back next.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE-validated programmes to help you? Read-Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club. Need support?
Yes, hello and welcome back to Teachers Talk Radio Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle. Now, remember, you can tweet me at Mr. Razdaz on Twitter. That is my Twitter handle, at Mr. Razdaz. You can send me a message on here. I would love to hear your views on what we're discussing today. And it's been really amazing to talk to many of you tonight. And it's been quite a emotive, quite a, and I keep saying the word, divisive conversation because of the subjects that we've been talking about. And Mal, you're absolutely correct, because you're saying that we're talking about the vaccines and the boosters that we are now discussing in this country and in the other ACs around the world. It's, Mal says, it seems wrong that we're talking about boosters when so much of the world population hasn't had a single one. And also, so many rich countries aren't supporting the rollout of vaccines to poorer countries. That is a very interesting point there, because there are many people, as you say, around the world who have not even had one jab in one arm. And yet we in this country are double jabbed. Our education system is now fully, really, you know, firing on all cylinders once again. We've returned to the old normal. Back in our classrooms, the removal of bubbles, the students all in front of us, the removal of masks. And I cannot tell you how happy, so happy, the amount of teachers and my colleagues are to be back in that situation. However, is it right that there are so many countries, so many people around the world who aren't able to be at that point yet? I don't know. I don't know whether that's right or whether it's wrong. I think that, you know, we have got to do everything that we possibly can to help our young people, help our nation. But we also need to be setting an example as one of the most influential countries in the world to help others. That is so important. Kindness is the most important thing in this world. Love and kindness and respect for each other. And maybe it is time for Britain to help out in the world with vaccines. I'd love to know your ideas on that. But yes, back to Amanda Spielman. Ofsted, we spent too much time focusing on food parcels. When we know that so many of our young people, so many of our families, who quite frankly would never ever dream of asking for help, who many of them would be so embarrassed to raise their hand and say, actually, I need help. Over the pandemic, there were so many stories of families struggling, so many stories of our young people, our vulnerables, who rely on free school meals, who get pupil premium funding, needing that extra care, that pastoral care, that actually was very, very difficult and challenging to provide during the lockdown. And Mal's right, how can they learn if they are hungry? Look, I struggle to get up in the morning and function if I don't have at least two very strong frothy coffees. I struggle if I don't have my breakfast, which does involve a mini roll or two. And you think about a teenager, the teenage brain, who requires fuel, who requires some substance to get on with their day. And if they don't have that, how is their brain going to engage in learning? They're not. And we know as teachers that, especially, as I keep telling you, I work in an all-boys school. Boys graze throughout the day. And they love eating. And that's because they need it. And at school, they're provided with that food. During lockdown, if we and our colleagues around the country had not have provided that food, I'm not so sure if the government would have done so themselves. I'm not too sure, because there are many, many different views and opinions on the free school meals that the government did provide, and the criticism that Gavin Williamson came under the former Secretary of State for Education with the free school meals. We saw it firsthand. Pictures on Twitter, in the news, in all of the national press, what was provided by the government in terms of free school meals. Many people have got different views and opinions on this, but I think in many ways, different schools provided different things. And not only, I might add, did we provide our vulnerables, our free school meal students, with food parcels, those families, and one of my closest colleagues worked very, very hard on those food parcels, as she does, by the way. Anyone that's listening, a little shout out to her through the whole year. So I would be interested if Amanda Spielman would ever like to come onto my show and discuss this. I'd love to have this conversation with her. I'd love to have a conversation with Ofsted, actually, because I've only ever spoken to Ofsted once, and that was after I was inspected, and I quite enjoyed myself. I'm not going to lie; it was quite an interesting experience. Highly, highly stressful, but very. Quite interesting. I was only in NQT plus one at the time. Amazing. We've got a listener in Denver, Colorado. I've got family out in Denver. I wonder if that's my family in Denver, Colorado. I wonder. I have been promoting this on Twitter, so it may well be. But Denver is eligible for jabs at 73%. 73%. And yet there are people around the world who have not been jabbed yet. I don't know. As a geography teacher, it astounds me. But we've all got different views on this. And as I say, I don't have an overarching opinion. I think that there are so many variables in this entire situation with COVID and education and everything. And I don't think that anybody really can say, oh, they've done a terrible job. They've done a terrible job. Because really, unless I can come back and say what I would have done better, a research and experienced informed policy that I could put forward, I don't know whether I am qualified to make a judgment. Now, yes, Elmer, many of them seem distracted even when they're not hungry. What happens if they are hungry? Well, this is the point. I mean, we know that teenagers are... I'm talking from a teenage perspective. I'm not a primary school teacher, so I'm not going to pretend that I know enough about primary school. But I would imagine all children, including primary school children, would become extremely distracted whilst they are hungry, if they're already distracted. And I know sometimes when I'm sat in meetings, if I'm sat, walking around my classroom doing my live marking, sometimes my brain goes, oh, I'm really hungry, really hungry. What am I going to have for lunch today? Am I going to get the tiramisu with my roast dinner? And I tell you what, my school's got an amazing new canteen. Oh, wow. The food on offer is absolutely amazing. And I tell you what, I have not been on Slimming World this week, guys. I really have not. I have treated myself many times. But it's okay. It is okay. Because we will get back on it. We will absolutely get back on it. It's the weekend now anyway. But we need to really, really talk about... these comments by Ofsted and the new education secretary, because I think they go hand in hand. A new education secretary who is not Gavin Williamson, who is not Michael Gove, who is not Nicky Morgan, who is not Justine Greening. How many more could I reel off over the past sort of 10 years? This is, I don't know, is it a new start? Should we be worried? Should we be quite... happy about this change? A man that has delivered the vaccine who has led the vaccine rollout quite successfully in this country, is now moving to a position where he is in charge and of leading the education system of the United Kingdom, who many see as the greatest education system in the world. He is now in charge of leading our profession. Many people are saying that he, and this was my favourite quote that I read in a article in The Guardian, that Robert Halfen, the Conservative MP, who is the chair of the House of Commons Education Committee, said that Nadeem Zahawi is someone who could find mangoes in the Antarctic and has the ability to potentially re-energise the government's education policies. Well, that might be quite interesting because education policy was ripped up and started again in 2010 by Michael Gove. It was then implemented with the new GCSEs in 2016. So everything changed. So potentially, do we have somebody new that might make a difference? I mean, I don't think we've heard a lot really from the official opposition on his appointment. We've not heard a lot at all really from the opposition in terms of education for quite a while. And really, it's necessary to have that opposition to the government because, you know, the government does things that sometimes are right, sometimes are wrong. I'm not going to say either way whether they're completely right or completely wrong because we've all got our views on this and it wouldn't be right for me to say. Because as a teacher, I am unbiased. I do not put my political views on anybody else because that is not right. But where are the opposition? What are they saying about education? I don't think we've heard a lot. Teachers are saying the same. I would be really interested to hear what they've got to say on education because I think that it's healthy to have that debate. It's healthy to have two people or more discussing our children's futures and the structures in place of how we provide that. And personally, I would like to see Nadeem Zahawi having a real focus, as Chris actually did in our interview, where we were discussing student and teacher mental health and well-being. And we came to an agreement, actually, that there needs to be a greater focus on well-being from the government because there is so many things that schools are doing to help teachers with their well-being of staff and students. I've said it before several times, my school has been absolutely fantastic with supporting staff with their well-being and workload. We, as an example, we do verbal feedback, we do live marking. With the days of taking exercise books home is well and truly beyond us because it's unnecessary. And I've got great admiration for my leadership team because they are very forward thinking. So that is just one example of how our school really supports teachers and their well-being. But the government, Chris was saying, needs to do more. And that might be in terms of introducing mindfulness. That might be in terms of really providing more funding to schools so they're able to provide more services to support students with well-being. And actually, we were saying there might be the opportunity to get some more for staff as well, because everything seems to be put on schools. Every onus seems to be put on schools. And it might be nice for Nadeem Zahawi to potentially, if he does, it would be fantastic to work more with the profession, to speak to the profession, because I think there is a place not only for a research-informed approach. Of course, there is. There's always a place for that, and teachers would agree there. But there's also a place for experience-based practice and experience-based policy and procedure. We know when we're teaching in a classroom, it's our experience that shapes the way we teach and the relationships that we build with our students. And I know that if I hadn't have been teaching for the past 6 years, I would not be the teacher that I am today without the experience that I've had. So maybe, Nadeem, give us a call come and visit us in our classrooms, spend a few days with us, and I'm sure you will receive a very, very warm welcome with a few biscuits. And if you come and visit me, I will give you a proper coffee. I'm sure it will be better than anything you get in the corridors of power. Mal says that Wes Streeting has been AWOL. Wes Streeting? Who is Wes Streeting, Mal? I don't think I have... I think I've seen him on TV once. I think he's made a little comment at some point before. I think that I've probably read an article or two about him previously. But yes, you are absolutely... Oh, the shadow education. I love the term shadow because very much in the shadows at the moment, aren't they? Not saying whether I agree or disagree with policy, because that's not my place, as I say, but they are very much in the shadows. But there we go. In a cupboard. Now, did I tell you all what I did with my cupboard in my classroom? Yeah, that sounds very ominous, doesn't it? What I did with my cupboard in my classroom. I spoke to my fabulous, absolutely amazing site team. And I put my new frothy coffee machine in my cupboard and my new Diet Coke mini fridge. So I've got a little stash of Diet Coke cans in my cupboard inside my fridge next to my frothy coffee machine, because my amazing site team cut a little hole in the back of my metal cupboard, and I've managed to form myself a little kitchenette in my classroom, and it's my most favourite thing in the world right now. Absolutely though. It does seem that the opposition have been slightly away at the moment. Let's put it that way. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about government ministers being away, but I think the opposition has decided to hide at the moment. So it would be great, please, if anybody from the Labour Party is listening, or anyone from even the Liberal Democrats are listening, I would love to hear your views. How do we move education forward? Will Nadeem Zahawi be the person to take education forward, to really, really build on everything that we need to build, as Boris keeps telling us, to build back better? I love doing a Boris impression, and my students love it when I do it as well. Yes, Mal, I think in some respects the media is very, very biased to conservatives. But then obviously you've got the other side as well. Many are biased to or have been accused of being biased towards the Labour Party. I think in many news outlets, you've always got a fair bit of bias to some degree. Yeah, absolutely. What does Build Back Better mean? What does it mean in terms of education? That's what I'd like to know. And that's what I would like Nadeem Zahawi, please, to come on here and tell me. What does that mean in terms of education, Nadeem? I'm more than happy to have a conversation with you. I would love to have a conversation with you. But yes, Wes Streeting, I would also love to have a conversation with you as well. I love talking to everyone. I love talking and getting all different views and opinions. And also, quite frankly, I do enjoy... putting the cat amongst the pigeons now and again, I won't lie. But that is absolutely the point in my show. I like to discuss these controversial topics. I like to discuss people's views and opinions on this stuff. And we've got so much going on right now. And I hope that you're really enjoying my shows and really enjoying me talking about the things that sometimes we don't speak about, the things that sometimes teachers don't talk about. And really, it's healthy to discuss them. It's really, really important that we do discuss these things, and not to necessarily put an opinion across, not to say, oh, no, you're wrong. Oh, I believe in the Conservative policy. I believe in the Labour policy. Oh, I'm a socialist. I'm a capitalist. I don't think that matters. What matters is that we talk about the issues and we find a way forward. And I think that teachers are some of the most amazing, well, we are the most amazing profession that exists. And I think that we have been so, so resilient and so amazing, including our students. So Amanda Spielman, please come on my show. Nadeem Zahawi, please come on my show. Wes Streeting, please come on my show. Boris, please come on my show. Keir Starmer, please come on my show. I would love to discuss this with you. And obviously, any of my fabulous teacher listeners, any of you wonderful people that would love to talk to me next week on my Twilight Show. We're very, very lucky next week. We've got Shelley, who's going to be on discussing about a wonderful system that she's got in place in her school about skills for life. And I'm very, very honoured to be able to have her on and to discuss this with her. Now, it's the weekend. Make sure that you have an amazing one. Chill out, relax, and make sure that you continue tuning in to Teachers Talk Radio, because we've got some fantastic shows coming up tonight. Enjoy and have a rest. Speak to you next week.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.